You are listening to Rouge, White, and Blue, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Rouge, Red, and Blue CFL podcast. My name's Oz Davis. I do exist, and I'm back to host this episode of the RWB. Joining me, as always, are my co-hosts. First, let's bring on the Winnipeg Blue Bombers fan and Wisconsin resident, Joe Pritchard. Joe, how you doing this week?
Doing pretty well. Looking good as far as the free agency goes for my boys. So I'm interested to hear you guys' thoughts.
Yes, we'll get onto that in just a moment. But I want to ask you this first, Joe. Have you been watching the curling?
A little bit. Actually, okay, the Team USA mixed doubles team was from McFarland, Wisconsin, which is just right next door to Madison, other side of the city from me. But yeah, that's pretty cool to watch. I did get to see them win. I believe they beat Norway on NBC, so that was fun to watch. Okay.
Yeah, because I remember last year around this time you mentioned being a new fan of curling. So I'm going to check out. I think the finals are on the weekend, right? Finals are this weekend?
You'd have to double check that. Okay. I've been a little bit more locked in on CFL free agency over the last few days.
Yes. How about it? Okay. Also with us, as always, is, okay, are you ready for this, guys? You ready for this? Is Dr. Rouge. Dr. Rouge, how you doing?
I have been formally and officially and correctly introduced this week.
But that was short because I've been on the DL for like 3 or 4 weeks now. So my muscles still aren't there yet. But
look, I know it's Olympic season. I know it's CFL free agency season. But, you know, with Major League Baseball pitchers and catchers reporting, your spring training effort has just been, you know, relayed there with the Rouge. And you did quite well. I suspect by the end of March and into April that you will really have that thing down. So.
Maybe. No promises. Yeah. Okay. Well, we have.
Do I get the curling question too?
Oh, have you been watching curling as well, Doug? See, I don't know about your fandom. Are you a fan? Are you
Absolutely.
A fan of the other Canadian game?
The curling is awesome. I love the luge too. And thankfully, I mean, all kidding aside with, you know, laughter and whatnot, the one American loser who had a really, really nasty run the other day. I think it was the last run of the women's heats, if I remember correctly. You know, thankfully she is okay. But indeed, I have enjoyed the curling. Although I must admit, I think those hats that the American curlers are wearing, those have to go. Those are a little too garish.
Joe, opinion on the hats?
No opinion on the hats.
Okay.
No
opinion. No opinion on the hats. All right. Well, let's go to something that Joe has an opinion about, I'm sure. Before the show, last week, we were sort of planning this episode and sort of optimistically hoping that we could do sort of a preview on most teams' free agency period. But after 2 days of the open market, I would say at least 75% to 80% of the major deals have been made, including quite a few by the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, who are really gearing up, really tightening up at all positions that they might have a weakness. Joe, of the 8 or 9 major signings here, what are among your favorites?
I gotta love the fact that most of the BC secondary is now in Winnipeg.
Yeah, exactly.
That helps. We'll see. There's still one floating around I'd really love to see in Ronnie Yell. I don't believe he's signed anywhere yet, but I cannot complain about Chandler Fenner coming on board. Also can't complain about Nick Dembski and Keenan LaFrance coming home either.
Right. Yeah. Now, of course, for a long time before free agency opened, you, of course, were very concerned about Jamar Westerman, signed about 2 hours before we started recording on, and today is what, Wednesday? Ooh, Valentine's Day. I've been meaning to chastise you guys about that too. And you talked about Westerman being your main concern. Now, of course, Westerman signed with the Alouettes. Feelings on that?
For the money that's being reported,
yeah,
it's not going to be fun to see him go, but at that point, there's not much you can do.
Yeah, plus you're dealing him to the East and probably to the seller in the East. Right, Dr. Rouge, who is a fan of the defending champion Toronto Argonauts, which still sounds really, really weird to say. How are you liking your team's moves in this first 2 days of free agency?
To me, the bigger question in Toronto is the internal unrest that seems to be, taking place. If James Wilder is back and is happy, I think you're looking at a franchise that can be, quite strong regular season and then into the playoffs as well. If he's not, then that backfield has a gigantic hole. Of the moves that they've made, sorry to say this, Joe, but I think, the one that jumps out at me as the one that I think, yes, is picking up, TJ Heath. And that partially because I think was one of those trades that could have been absolutely disastrous for the franchise and didn't turn out as bad as it otherwise might have been. Certainly the East, I think on paper right now, it looks like Hamilton is the best of the four. But again, it doesn't take an awful lot. And we know with the kind of experience that Ricky Ray has, that he can find a way to win that game or to make that one drive. So the optimism is still there. Although I think if you saw Wilder in camp in the spring and he's happy, then I think there's going to be much more optimism than there is right now.
Oh, is there any indication that Wilder's coming back though?
I don't think so.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I think this is kind of a new wave kind of thing. I think you're going to see this a bit more frequently. Just guys sitting out a year. I mean, look, it's an alternative to retiring at age 29, which is something that we're going to see a lot more often in the future on both sides of the border in this game.
The other thing is, we were talking about free agency. I think there was sort of a presumption in the minds of so many, many people that Jerome Messam, if he got to free agency, and it was pretty apparent, I think, in the last 48 or so hours prior to free agency starting that he was going to get there. I think there was sort of a general feeling among a lot of people that the most likely destination was Toronto. Obviously, that hasn't happened. Saskatchewan is sort of picking up, 10 pieces and letting go of 9 and picking up 10 more and letting go of 9 more. We didn't even talk about Derek Dennis getting released from there a couple of days ago.
Wamba.
I mean, there's no question the backfield in Toronto is a significant concern right now. No question.
Okay. One more for you, Dr. Roos, because I already know, the answer from Joe, and that is this. Okay. So the Riders, you mentioned, signed Jerome Messam, signed Zach Evans, the defensive lineman, a couple other nice acquisitions by them, this offseason in general. Better offseason so far, Riders or Winnipeg?
Do I want to keep Joe as my friend? Do I want to keep Joe as my friend?
Nope, say your piece. That's what we're here for.
Here's what I think. If everything the Riders have done gets them to the Grey Cup in 2018, then yes, Saskatchewan's had the better offseason. But the expectations, I mean, let's face it, we are talking about Saskatchewan. The expectations right now are basically 18-0 in the regular season and storming through their playoff games and winning it all. You know that expectation is getting higher and higher and higher. And look, Zach Collaros, I think the three of us will admit we all like him. Zach Collaros is coming off a couple of seasons where statistically he wasn't the same. And obviously some of that I think was just, you know, his mental state of mind. You've got Jerome Messam, who is a tremendous talent, but has taken a lot of hits over the last couple of years. You have Daron Carter, who might be just the best player in the league, just in terms of raw talent. And he seems to always do something that makes you just want to go, would you please grow up? They've done an awful lot. There's an awful lot of reasons to be excited. Right now, I think cautiously, you'd have to say that they have had the better offseason in comparison to Winnipeg, but that's not to say Winnipeg's had a bad one at all.
But Dr. Moretti, and maybe you can back me up on this one, Joe. You know, Daron Carter gets a lot of smack for, you know, attitude problems, flippancy, whatever. I've been one of them, you know, used to play on my Alouettes. But did you see the tweet that he had last week? Noticed that some couple on the airplane that he was on was celebrating mm-hmm. their honeymoon. And so, you know, he treated them to, mm-hmm. I believe, a bunch of champagne. Now, this was the day after, you know, he got busted for having a little bit of weed on. So, but come on, man. I just want to represent my man a little bit here, Dr. Rouge. I mean, give Daron a little.
You know, and I'll be honest with you.
A little gold star for that.
We discussed this a little bit last week when Andrew Buchholz was on the show. And in terms of, you know, if Daron Carter gets busted for weed in the United States, it's a big deal. I'm not saying it was not a big deal in Canada, but let's face it, in a couple of months, that's going to be legal in Canada. So
right.
I'm not too caught up in that. To me, it's that occasional, you know, a 7-yard pass over the middle, and it's like, you know, he's found the Holy Grail or something. You know, get up, move on, get on to the next play. You know, now saying that, yeah, just imagine Daron Carter making a pick in the, you know, the Western Final, and it gets
yeah.
the riders to the Grey Cup. Oh my, lands in heaven. You know, you'll never hear the end of it. I like the guy. I admit that. I like him. I just wish we could see some more maturity out of him.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to be discussing quite a bit of free agency with our guests, but before we do, Joe, I just wanted to ask you, because I don't believe you got this into the conversation. What's been the biggest surprise or the most outstanding aspect of the free agency period to you so far?
Ooh, biggest surprise. Give me a second on that one.
aside from the Alouette sign.
Actually, I kind of think that's it. I mean, besides seeing BC take a bunch of Edmonton Eskimos, which really shouldn't be a surprise in hindsight, just seeing Montreal making such a big splash with names right now, yes, they do need to shore up that secondary. Yes, they do need help, but I gotta wonder where their depth's gonna come from at this point when they're throwing money or like that around. If any of the numbers reported are accurate, which I have no reason to doubt.
It's the Montreal way. We've been doing this for years, overpaying guys. It's just that, you know, the problem is in the past we were overpaying guys based on legacy. You know, now we're just overpaying guys. You know, because nobody else wants to come here. As Mark points out in just a moment. What do you think? Should we just go straight to the interview?
I think so. Let's go on.
Because I'm trying not to, as I'm hosting this right now, I'm trying not to step on too much of what we're about to say in this interview, because of the wackiness of time travel. We've already done the interview and we're doing this part second. So let's cut away. We'll probably do a bar music here, and then we'll go to the interview, and then we'll come back from the interview and close out the Rouge, White, and Blue podcast, which is what you're listening to. In terms of prestige, I think it will be difficult to top our next guest on the Rouge, White, and Blue. Joining us today is someone that podcast bloggers, CFL fans, sports fans must pay heed to, a man that is in the media wing of the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. He is part of the longest running CFL play-by-play team in history. He's with the Calgary Stampeders team. He is Mark Stevens. Mark, how are you today?
Good. Good to be talking football. Lots to talk about. The free agency period has exploded and lots of comings and goings here.
Right. Yeah, we're definitely going to talk free agency because, yeah. Wow. Yeah, like you said, a lot to talk about. But Mark, I'm going to ask you one question first, which is sort of about the greater story, I think, in the CFL these days, namely your team, the Calgary Stampeders. Now, we talk a lot about, you know, failed expectations, going to two Grey Cups, losing in heartbreaking fashion after, you know, more or less dominating the league the last 3 or 4 years in the regular season. You're the play-by-play guy. You're in the media there. What is your take on this, and how does this kind of loss affect you?
Just a moment. I should have turned my phone off here. Just a moment there. All right.
Good special effects, though.
Good, good. Yeah, it means we're right on top of things. I should have said it was an agent calling me with a scoop, but anyway. yeah. Here's the deal. Yes, it's going to be tough. That'll be the biggest challenge for everyone is to come back knowing how hard they worked, how much success they had, and don't have much to show for. That's quite a problem. So I understand what's going on. It's not a great situation, and you know, it's going to be tough to get the psychology of the team all pulled back together.
I got to throw this one at you, too, real quick. We're going to get into free agency, so let me ask you this. How big is the loss of Jerome Messam?
Oh, it'll be big. I mean, the Stampeders have lost their top running back. They've lost their top receiver. They've lost their sack leader. So it's going to be tough. They're going to have to shake things up quite a bit and make some changes there. But, yeah, it's going to be a change. No question about that. Because you've got Jerome Messam and all those 1,000 yards and his ability to make things happen. But they're going to have to find a different way to do it with different people for sure.
Mark, from the time you spend around John Huffnagel and obviously the coaching staff and whatnot and the other members of the front office, is it your sense that the turnover that has taken place in this offseason is better to make changes a year ahead of when perhaps you have to instead of a year afterwards? In other words, to try to do things now to likely or more likely extend that window of success that the Stamps have enjoyed?
Well, that's what they've been very good at, is knowing when to let guys go. You know, they generally had success, shall we say, a little bit ahead of time as opposed to, you know, after the fact. You know, I look at a situation that's, I think that played a lot into Jerome Messam, a talented running back to be sure. And he'll help Saskatchewan, but he's had a lot of carries the last couple of years. And, you know, the bottom's going to fall out as it does for every running back, that durability and everything. So I think that played a big role in it as well, that they were worried, as you say, get a guy a half year ahead of time instead of a half year after the fact.
From the various changes that have taken place, either guys retiring, guys being let go, etc., which one of those moves stood out for you as the most surprising and why?
The Charleston Hughes move is the one that caught me a little bit off guard, and I'll tell you why. I know they have a lot of great ends in camp, and I know they've spent a lot of money on the line, but their situation is I thought that somehow they might package up one of those guys for something at the draft and keep Charleston around. I know that they like to move guys on, but I thought because he was so productive that maybe he would be a guy that would escape the sort of wave of 33 and overs moving on. I thought he might be the one guy to escape it. So his surprised me the most. I'd say Marquay McDaniels was a bit of a surprise too, but Charleston more so than the other, just because he still is a very, very productive
player. Charleston Hughes seems to be one of the more lucrative, where players are either moving on to CFL free agency or even getting a shot down south right after they've played opposite Hughes. So that loss is obviously going to loom large. It just feels like this year there's a little bit more chipping away at the nucleus. Is that the feeling as well? Because they've usually been so good at being able to bring next man up, but how much is too much?
Well, fair enough, and you know, but I'll just say this: John Huffnagel has earned the confidence and trust of everyone just because he has made some controversial moves in the past. But I will say this. I would say in the 10 years he's been here, the Charleston Hughes one is probably the one that most people are most upset with. There are others that have drawn some criticism, but that's the one that probably was, most noted. You have to remember they've lost a lot of leadership in the room. You mentioned the guys that were let go. They also lost three very senior players, Dan Fader, Kyle, Rob Cote, and Josh Bell. They're all going to free agency, at least to retirement, not to free agency. So their careers are over as well. And, it's just the evolution of time. And Stampeders have had a history of knowing when to make the right moves. But it's a fair question to ask. And you're not the first to ask it, I can assure you of that.
I mean, the answer to this next question might be we'll never know, but I'll throw it out there anyway. If the Stamps had won either or both of the last two Grey Cups, do you think the amount of change we saw this offseason would have still taken place?
I do. I think they're in a situation of constantly working to keep the future in mind. They've done a very good job of that, as you say, bringing up a lot of young players. The practice roster, they use not just to stash guys away, they use it as a development tool to get guys ready. So I think there would have been a number of those moves. They're tough, they're painful, but that's how John Huffnagel and Wally Buono and guys like that have got to the top and stayed on top for a long time. They make the difficult calls at the right time. But I know what you're saying, that two Grey Cups are pretty hard to handle, but I think the Stampeders would have made a lot of those, maybe all of those moves and retirements are retirement.
Aren't really following that model, which given their success over the past 5 years and even longer in some cases, just makes it clear that they may be following the wrong path. But what do you make of the moves that Saskatchewan and Winnipeg are making in comparison to what Calgary's doing?
Well, first of all, when it comes to Saskatchewan, they're clearly in a win-now mode. They brought in a lot of the veterans. You mentioned Jerome Messam. It's also, Sam Hurl is there. They signed Charleston Hughes, technically not a free agent, but they did get him via a trade. And also Bond today, the lineman from Winnipeg, was brought in. They also let some guys go. Bawamba, who I'm sure will be working very, very soon. I think Derek Dennis will find a spot as well. But Saskatchewan clearly is in a win-now mode. They've made the big trade for Kolaros, and we'll see how that works out. Kolaros, obviously a guy that's going to be in a situation of having to stabilize that position for Saskatchewan. Wasn't as stable as they would have liked last year, although Glenn and Bridge gave them a lot of good quarterbacking. Winnipeg, I'm not surprised. Remember, they've won 23 games in the last 2 years. And, and only the Stampeders have won more regular season games. So I think they think their time is now. I think they believe that they were a bit of an injury-battered team going into their playoff game against Edmonton, and that cost them and also cost them down the stretch. So I think they've added some very nice pieces. I think we all saw the Dembski signing coming soon, LaFrance going home. So I think they're in pretty good shape. I like what Winnipeg's done. I view Saskatchewan much more in a win-now mode. This has been a longer process for Winnipeg, and they view these guys as depth guys, maybe just to get them over the top there.
Do you think Winnipeg's time is now, Mark?
They're good. Whether somebody's still got to knock off the Stampeders, right? So
right. Well, that was my next question. Yeah. Before you fed me that is, okay, so who are the Stamps looking over the shoulder at?
I would say Winnipeg. Yeah. And Calero bounce back. Don't forget, Edmonton was a very good team, too, and they gave the Stampeders all they could handle in the West Final as well. And, Mike Riley, the league's MOP, is going back. So, it's going to be tight for sure. I don't know what BC is doing besides importing the 2017 Edmonton Eskimos. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't, but we will see. But I would say Winnipeg is probably the biggest challenger right now. Oh, Saskatchewan is very good. I mean, Charleston Hughes, Jefferson on the ends there. That'll provide some headaches for quarterbacks, to be sure. And Jerome Messam stabilizing the running game.
What strikes me is that, it seems as though if it's possible that the five Western teams might be, at least on paper, as good or stronger than they were last year. Now, what that means for the East, we don't know yet, but the West was sort of these four heavyweights, and obviously BC fell off sort of around the sixth or seventh week of the season and largely was a non-factor. But, it's become almost like five elite teams beating each other's brains out each week. Is it possible that all five Western teams are as good, if not better, than last year?
Yeah, I think that's possible for sure. And, you know, they've done a lot of good things. And I was one of these guys that was pounding the table. It's time to get a one division look in the CFL, put everybody in one division. But then the last 2 years, the East has won the Grey Cup. So it kind of knocks a little wind out of the argument, doesn't it? But no, you're right. The strength again is in the West. Whether the Grey Cup champion is in the West, I guess, mm-hmm. is entirely a different matter.
Who at this point from the folks that the Stamps have brought in, do you see as being most likely to not only be a leader on the field, but a leader in the clubhouse? In other words, who might be that most important new face?
Well, all I can say is I like Emmanuel Davis. When he was with Hamilton a couple of years ago and the year before that, I thought he was really good. I really liked him. He got derailed by injuries last year. I just know him as a player. I'm not sure about his leadership in the dressing room. It's not, maybe he is. I just don't know him. I think the leaders, though, rather than the free agent guys, because they're new, they haven't been around the culture and the people in the dressing room, the leadership will have to come from within. You know, is it Anthony Parker, who amazingly is entering his eighth season? Does Spencer Wilson step up and maybe be that guy? Maybe there's somebody else who's just sat quietly by and, was kind of in the background, but he emerges. Alex Singleton, the fine linebacker, will be a leader as well. So these are guys that can step up. Maybe just, they know it's their time, their opportunity. I mean, I mentioned Anthony Parker. 8 years is a heck of a career. I still think of him, though, as a guy running around for the University of Calgary playing, but I guess that day's come and gone a long time ago.
Makes it hard for all of us to claim we're 25, doesn't it?
He's only 28. He's got 8 years in the league. Holy jeez. Yeah.
Mark, I wanted to ask you this one. For the past couple, 3 years now, the Stamps have had a legendarily good offensive line. So tell me, please, that the Stamps are not going to be boring and go with a lineman in the first round of the draft. Where do you think the Stamps are going in the draft?
Lineman. Sorry. You know what's even better about how good their line is, and I agree with you, it's the multiple bodies that have played on the line.
Yeah,
they've had
flip-flop
guys through injuries and things like that, and for reasons I just don't understand, they have a staggering toll. I personally, this is me, nobody's tipped anything to me in the organization, I personally would like to see him go after Kirby Fabian. He's a University of Calgary and a Calgary product, and just to add to that depth, and they've got a couple of guys. Quinn Smith didn't play a lot last year. Dylan Guy, they picked up in a trade. But they just never seemed – there was one lineman short, I guess, what I'm saying. They always seem to need one more line.
Yeah, last year, if I recall correctly, last year they started, I think it was 11 different guys on the line through the course of the season. This was chasing a year where they statistically had the best season of all time.
Yeah, so, and an import center who never played center before. They went through multiple centers. Pierre Labertu never hit the field last year. Roman Grosman is a young man that barely hit the field. They had a guy in training camp that didn't make it past the first couple of scrimmages. So that's the kind of toll that they had. And whether they want to go through Cambry Williams at center, I would. He did well. He really stepped up to the challenge. But, I hate to, bore you and tell you that some great, find that they and only they have, but I think they'll just find a good lineman.
Quinn Smith and was even a defensive lineman for some time before having to come over to the offensive side of the ball. Wasn't there one point, was that 2015, where both Quinn Smith and Junior Turner were on the line at the same time? My good. Well,
it was in a game that you had. And that's just it. You think you got all these linemen, you go to training camp, and there's linemen all over the place.
That just tells you how good of a system you have.
Again, they were. They just were all
plug and play with with players that have even played the line all that much on that side of the ball anyway. But let's shift gears a little bit. Let's go out east into a franchise that doesn't seem to know what to do. Montreal seems to be making big moves today, but they seem to be throwing money around like crazy here. It just seems like they can't find a formula that's working like Calgary. What do you think it's going to take for them to be able to settle themselves down and just try something out for a couple of years rather than just keep mixing and matching and trying to find some magic formula.
Yeah.
Well, find the next Anthony Calvillo would be a tremendous start. I mean, the number of guys that have started at quarterback there is just a dizzying array of quarterbacks. Some have had good careers. Some have had no careers there. So to find stability there, do they have it? I talked to Cavis Reed when they had the GM's meetings. He said their goal is to develop a quarterback internally. Is that guy there? I don't know. Right now, I guess we'll have to find out. But they've had the next great thing. How many times? Troy Smith with Heisman trophies and other guys. Dan, I mean, how many guys have gone through there? I think 18 different quarterbacks since Anthony Calvillo left. So that's number one. I agree with you. I am shocked at the money they're throwing around, but I'll be blunt. They have to. They have to. It's not a particularly attractive place that you would want to go right now. Maybe in time it'll be better, but they have to pay guys to get them there because it's probably not the first choice of an awful lot of guys once a free agency opens up.
Were you surprised that Tommy Campbell went there? I mean, obviously when a team doesn't want you, you could end up anywhere. I understand that. Is it your sense that perhaps Campbell didn't have the kind of market he expected? Or did Campbell realize that his greatest financial opportunity was in Montreal, and that's why he jumped at that one as quickly as he did?
Well, a few things. First, was I surprised? Yeah, I was, actually. I talked to Tom, I talked to Peter, I thought, you know, maybe they were taking their time a bit, but it was going to get done. But once noon Monday hit, the day before free agency, and he hadn't signed, I started to get a little wondering what was going on here. I think he had a last-minute change of heart. I'm not exactly sure what tipped him there, but I will say this. He was close to Khalil, or still is for that matter, Khalil Carter, who was the Stampeders' secondary coach last year, who now is Montreal's defensive coordinator. I think they went in there like gangbusters and offered him more than the Stampeders were prepared to. I'm not sure exactly what tipped the balance. Maybe he just sat back and didn't hear something he liked from the Stampeders or just got that close to free agency and said, you know what, I'll take a shot at it. Because I was pretty convinced that he was going to sign here, but he didn't. He went to Montreal. He's making a lot of money, and I would put that as a surprise. That's probably the one thing that I didn't see coming when the Stampeders and the CFL entered free agency.
Yeah, I was going to ask. What the biggest surprise for you was. I was going to say that's my biggest surprise so far.
Yeah, me too.
Is there anybody you're looking for the Stamps to sign or anybody else to sign that hasn't been signed yet?
Fabian's the one for me. I had three guys the Stampeders should go after. Okay, I wrote them down here, actually, in anticipation of this. I said they should go after Jake Hardy. But I guess Montreal took care of that. Yep. I also said they should take a shot at Lucchese Purifoy. I guess he's gone too. I also had down Kirby Fabian. So those are my guys. Oh, and Konar from Edmonton. Those are my guys that they should go after. But
And I think Konar re-signed with Edmonton.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
If I remember right.
Yeah. 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 So just me. That's the guys I thought so.
We should have had you on the show 2 days earlier.
My top three free agents was changing minute by minute. Cause I had Luke Tasker and Laurent as my top two guys, and a few minutes before the deadline, both were off the board. So there you are. I know the Stampeders generally do not like to bring in frontline free agents, fearing that, you know, their thought process is if there is extra cash to go around, it should be to those that have sacrificed and worked for you. So that's their philosophy. And here's another instance of it.
We talked a little bit about the question about, Montreal and where it might be going and plans and all of that. Do you buy into that tremendous optimism that is surrounding the Hamilton Tiger Cats at this point? Let's face it. The first half of the season was a disaster last year. Everything seemed to go right in the second half, but there also was no pressure that team faced. Is it legit optimism, or are there still enough questions there that, as you see it, there's maybe a little more smoke than there are mirrors right now?
No, I think there's a reason for optimism. I understand that. Yeah, when they had that first half, we saw bottom when it was 60-1 at McMahon Stadium. So we know where bottom was for the Alouettes. Then 2 days later, they stayed in Calgary, went to a high school because their next game was at Edmonton. They were fighting on the field. So we saw bottom here pretty close up. No, they were different under June Jones. I hope like heck. I don't know when it's going to happen. Just get rid of this Johnny Manziel buffoonery. Your quarterback is Mazzoli. Work with him. Get him coached up. Get him ready to come in as the number one guy. That's your guy. He looked pretty good. He's fine. Tasker's tremendous. Laurent is very good. Dean is very good. So I get where there's a lot of optimism for Hamilton. So, yes, I'm buying into it. I just hope they aren't competing with themselves with all this
Manziel thing just strikes me. You always hear coaches talk about not wanting distractions. Yeah. And Manziel is a distraction with a capital D. Obviously, he has talent. Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about him. But it seems like he's chosen another path, at least for now. So Mazzoli seems to be the guy for at least now.
Yeah. You know, he has a pretty good resume. He committed a few little faux pas in college. That's why he kind of got off the radar a little bit. But, I quite like him. The Stampeders humiliated the Tiger Cats here, but went down there late. It was mid-October. You know, Hamilton gave them a game. Stampeders won, but it was far from a sure thing. It was 28-25 for the Stampeders. So, I buy into what's going on in Hamilton. I like June Jones. He approached it, with a renewed, vigorous attitude. I'm not sure about bringing in 76-year-old Jerry Glanville, but we'll let that go. But he took it seriously. I thought he was just up there for a vacation. No, he wants to win, and I like the looks of them. I think they're probably, as we sit here today, the Eastern
favorite. Well, I guess the two other teams out east right now, Toronto Argonauts that are facing a little bit of internal dissension and may not have a couple of their stars over what may or may not have been agreements to leave or not leave or what have you. And then you have Ottawa that just doesn't seem to have much of a direction at this point. Do you think either of those two can surprise again and maybe have a better season than they did last year? I mean, obviously the Argos won it, but they ended up around 500. So, do you think they certainly did? Are we looking at? Are we looking
Toronto
at
did pull off one big surprise? I can tell you that. Yeah.
Wins, 12
that would be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah, instead of these teams staggering along like that. No, I think Toronto's fine. Once Ricky Ray made the decision to come back, I think they're in very good shape. I'm a little annoyed with those two guys. That really teed off on the Argonauts. I mean, they say they're not making enough money and this and that. I get it. But until the Toronto Argonauts came calling, they were making no money from football. So, it's tough. I get it. I'm not trying to be, they have a little bit of my support, but they certainly don't have my sympathy for, ripping into a valid contract. So the Argos are going to have to find some different things. Personally, I thought that's where Messam would land, is in Toronto. Mm-hmm. A, he's a hometown guy. B, they need somebody if Wilder doesn't have a change of heart there. But Toronto's pretty good. I quite like them. They had some things go their way last year, including a 109-yard fumble return. But other than that, I thought they were a pretty good team. I'm not sure about where Bear Woods fits in or if he goes back there or not. But we'll see. But Hamilton's a favorite. But no, Toronto with Ricky Ray, in his last hurrah, I think it's a pretty good team.
It's funny, guys. Mark talks about these plays as if he likes – saw them firsthand. No, these
Which
are the plays that the Argonauts made. It's like he saw it firsthand.
Back to Ottawa. I think they're looking at retooling their defense, which is why I thought if Tommy Campbell didn't go to Montreal, he'd go to Ottawa. They didn't make many big plays last year. They weren't particularly dynamic, so they're fixing up their philosophy and doing a few things there. They made quite a number of changes to their coaching staff as well. So we'll see if that pays off because. They took a step back from winning a Grey Cup. They've been sub 500 or at 500 the last couple of years. So, far from awful, but not at the top of the mountain regular season wise anyway.
Mark, there was a lot of news being made by the commissioner as he does his city by city tour. I think there are probably two significant questions or issues on the minds of most CFL fans. One being, will there be expansion? If so, when? And I think the question that has the more immediate answer is, is the season likely to be moved up? From what you're hearing, either from the commissioner or from people who know him, let's deal with the schedule issue first. Is this the last year that we're likely to see a late November Grey Cup?
I'm a little mixed on that because I'll just give you, I was at the event in Calgary here. I hosted it. It was three quarters, one quarter to move it up. He said in other stops, it was neutral, that people didn't particularly care one way or the other what they did. Moving it up presents its own unique set of challenges. And if your goal is to get away from the crummy weather, I don't know what they did, because strictly Calgary speaking, November 3rd, the Stampeders played their final regular season game, and it was brutal. It was well below freezing. The wind was howling. Snow was coming. They played the West Final on the 19th, 2+ weeks later. And it was a little on the cool side, right around freezing or a couple degrees, but the weather played no role whatsoever. So the point I'm trying to make is, once you hit November, I can't, there's no guarantees of anything anyway. So you move it up 3 weeks. Does that impact you in May? We could be fighting with, players getting out of school. I mean, if they're barely able to get out of school and come to the training camps and possible NHL playoffs as well. So I wouldn't mind a week or so, but it was, yeah, as you say, three quarters, one quarter in Calgary to move
early
up. So
May,
we'll see
so
what
that's
comes
around out. Time. Yeah. Well, you'd have to move the draft up, and then you're playing a guessing game as to who the NFL grabs. So there's a lot more to this than just weather to consider, too. So
exactly. Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see where this falls.
I mean, I'll just say one thing right now, too. The three-letter network, I understand, has it in the contract that the Grey Cup is the last Sunday of November.
And for me personally, and a few others that have come up down here to the Grey Cup, we definitely appreciate the extra couple days off, because that happens to fall on our Thanksgiving weekend. Yes, very nice not to have to take much work time off for
Thanksgiving,
that.
That's right.
Now, you were mentioning Ambrosi's speaking tour. It really feels like there's a lot of optimism around the league circles right now as to where this league is heading. It's obviously been heading in an upward trajectory for quite some time. Is there more optimism now than there was even a couple of years ago as to where we're going?
Oh, I think so. I think he's really come in with a real vision and a plan. He's a retired former player. He's had extensive business experience. Pardon me. He seems to really have his handle on what's going on. I think the speaking tour is a runaway hit to go to all the different sites and meet with fans and season ticket holders. And, he's in Calgary here. He met with a handful of key sponsors as well. So he's a pretty sharp customer, and I really like what he's doing. Is it going to be enough to spearhead a franchise into Halifax? I would say this is their best opportunity. I'm not going to say it's going to happen immediately, but you know what could happen by 2020, and what a bonus that would be with, balancing out the divisions and just everything. It'd be just a wonderful, wonderful time. And, stadium is an issue, but we'll see what happens.
Oz, you started to ask a question. I think I accidentally cut you off there a minute or two ago.
Well, I just wanted to throw this one out there. I mean, Joe would probably know better than any of us because he's played around with this kind of stuff before. But it seems to me that if you add a 10th team, you can automatically shave off at least 1 week off the schedule, right? Because then you don't need two buys per team. It only is that way because you have an odd number of teams. Yeah. Right. So automatically you shave off a week, and then you bump it up like one more week beyond that. There you go. Oh, you just saved.
Well, I think that's fair. There's a lot of logistical things that would work. Sure.
Yeah. It was just something that occurred to me. So it wasn't that important. So if you guys have a better question for Mark, please give it to him.
and you mentioned the television contract. And that is valid through 2021, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So presuming that is the case, it could all be a moot point for another couple of years.
Could be, if they make a compelling case. If they make a compelling case to TSN, they really might switch. So, don't know.
I'm not sure I'd have that ear,
Yeah.
No,
we'll see. We'll see about it.
I'm being facetious, but I do agree with you to the extent that, and this is not a criticism of the previous two commissioners, but I think that there are two things from sort of my perspective, and I'm curious, Mark, if you've seen the same things about Ambrosi. One, I think, as you mentioned, being a player, a former player in the league, I think he understands that lifestyle, what it means to be a CFL player, et cetera.
Yeah.
And maybe more importantly, coming from the finance world, you know, he's not going to make decisions that are going to be popular, but not feasible and not financially practical for, you know, for the league. I'm curious if those two sort of sentiments come out when you see him much more often than somebody like the three of us.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I think he's got a sense of it. He comes at it from a customer viewpoint as well. We can't lose sight of that because in the finance world, he had to work with customers and, you know, build systems to deal with customers. He's going to get the league office more involved in things and in terms of being a central resource for teams. So it's a really a good idea because, as he said right on the first few days of the job, he realized how independent the teams were of each other. And he said that's one thing he wants to correct is get people working together as opposed to nine little fiefdoms out there.
Which makes sense for a league that has nine teams, to make them much more cohesive. Sure.
Yeah. So no, I like his approach and we'll see if it pays off. He dealt with some of the off-field or on-field issues during the season. Now he's dealing with some of the off-field issues right now. So we'll see.
What, in your opinion, what is the biggest off-field issue facing the CFL right now, Mark?
Well, it will be the collective agreement coming up. And you're seeing it impacting already with a lot of one-year deals. You know, we've been sitting here and you guys have raised the relative health of the CFL and the players are well aware of it as well. Other issues, that are going to come to pass, Montreal and Calgary Stadium issues are some of the big issues as well that must be dealt with. And, I think those are some things, there are some, other things, you know, in-game things they can do with the different challenges, which they did address during the year, and maybe adding a player or two to the roster. But the game itself, I think, is pretty healthy, not perfect, but pretty healthy. The off-field will be the collective agreement coming up. It expires May 15th of 19, and the stadium issues in Calgary and Montreal.
Absent a new stadium, is a Grey Cup in the foreseeable future in Calgary a non-starter, or is it still conceivable that there could be another Grey Cup at McMahon?
Given the rotation of the league, you know, moving the Grey Cup around, Calgary's turn is close. Calgary will have a Grey Cup within the next 3 years, I predict.
Okay.
Even though the stadium, I get it, I understand. I hear all that, and I get all that, and they're all fair comments, but you know, they do play a regular season set of games here, and, there aren't chunks of concrete dropping down between plays or anything. So it'd be a challenge. I'm not here to suggest it's perfect, but I'm convinced within 3 years, you know, the three teams, Edmonton has it this year. At the end of the last decade, Edmonton, Calgary, and Montreal, or at least Montreal, Calgary and Edmonton hosted Grey Cups in three consecutive years. So Calgary and Montreal are probably next up on the clock. I understand that some other teams will be bugging to get in there. So it's not a perfect rotation, but it's worked out every 9 or 10 years. You get a Grey Cup. Calgary last had it in 2009. So, you know, do the math, 19, 20, 21, 22. I'm convinced one of those will be in Calgary.
Joe, you are of course hoping that when that happens that
absolutely I'd love to see Western that, but for a Grey Cup I'll take any game I can get. They're always fantastic. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, one thing I'm so envious of places like BC and like Regina, I've seen it, is winning a home Grey Cup. Never happened with the Stampede.
Yeah.
They've never even played in a game in Calgary. So there's been four. The Stampeders have never played in one in Calgary. So there you go.
I think the three of us have not seen the new stadium. I don't think any of us made it to Regina last year. From a fan's perspective, you know, take off your Calgary Stampeders hat, so to speak. And, is that the kind of facility in terms of the amenities and all of that, that other cities will begin to look at as they think about what their new stadium opportunities or responsibilities are going to be?
They'd certainly incorporate a lot of it. I can say that for sure. It's bigger. It's about 34,000. That's perfect for Regina where they fill it. I know I did walk around the concourse just to get the fan experience before the game. It's amazing. big wide concourses, lots of concessions, a nice area at one end where you can stand and watch the game, and you don't have to sit in your seat the whole time, wander around in an area there. The amenities are 21st century, so Regina went from by far the worst stadium to by far the nicest one, and should Calgary get a new stadium or whoever's next on the new stadium list, I would steal a lot of the concepts from there because they've done it really, really well. Nice, big, spacious dressing rooms. Lots of rooms for everywhere. You know, the one negative is the geography of Regina. It's kind of a bit of a squeezed out area, so get access is a little bit of a challenge. But other than that, it's an amazing stadium for sure.
Okay, Mark. Well, we can let you get out of here, but I got one final question for you. Not at all. Has nothing to do with the CFL. But you're out there in Calgary, so you got to help me out. I've heard some very disturbing rumors. Is it true that the future of the Flames is in doubt? Is it true?
The future of let's put it this way. There's quite a stalemate over the future of the Saddle Dome. And
right.
The city and the team are quite at odds about what to do next, how much should be put into the stadium. Do I think there's a possibility the Flames could move? I guess in theory, but I think that's way down the list of options that are facing the team. But okay. Yeah, there's a giant stalemate. The Flames are going to play as long as they think it's practical to play in the Saddle Dome, but it's reached its best before date. It's time to move on, but there's different visions on where it should go, who's going to pay for it. There is an Olympic bid being contemplated for 2026. For Calgary, so hopefully that would spur some arena development. But right now, there's nothing going on with it. The Saddle Dome's the home. The Saddle Dome will be the home. And if that works for the Flames, great. If not, the team may be sold. But I would say, you know, down the road, moving is a real last option because the Flames have their greatest chance for success right there in Calgary. So we'll see.
Right, right.
But it is quite a football thing, no mistake about it. No pun intended.
Right. Okay. Mark Steven, play-by-play voice of the Calgary Stampeders, we thank you very much for being on the show today. Come back and see us later in the season, and you can brag to us when the Stamps are 10-0-1 about week 12.
Well, yeah, but they'll settle for being 1-0 on the last week in November.
Right, exactly.
They'll be a very good team again, and until somebody finds a way to knock them off, they go in as the favorites. I know it sounds a little homerish, but until they're knocked off, they are the favorites. You know, I got a lot of comments, people ripping into the team. They got to tear it apart. They're terrible. You know, here's what they got to do next year. Don't fumble on the 3-yard line and have a guy run back 109 yards. You know, that's all you got to coach up.
Is that the secret? That's pretty much it, as far as
I can tell, or not have a guy peek back and a receiver throw up, you know, 100. Anyway, mm-hmm. It was two incredible plays and Toronto made them. I guess they deserve the credit, but it's not excuse to shred what is an excellent team. So
this 109 yard play was significant, wasn't it?
I did some research. And I think it's the longest in the history of the league. Regular season playoffs.
That's what they were saying. That's what they said at the time. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's one of those things that closes a great cup, like 13th man. Yeah, all you have to do is say that, and it traumatizes an entire fan base.
Yeah, oh, no question. That one will too. And you know,
right, exactly.
Stamps have had some tough losses. I would say, you know, maybe because perspective isn't there right now, but I would say that's the toughest loss they've ever had. Yeah,
Mark, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. I appreciate you responding as you did to the invitation to chat with us. This has been a lot of fun.
Well, I hope there's another time to do it. I look forward to it.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Mark Steven, probably, as I said, the most prestigious guest we've ever had on the Right Blue podcast. We're approaching episode 100. Joe, I mean, we've never had a Hall of Famer on the show. Have we had anybody on Mark's level?
Goodness, I'm racking my brain here. I don't think so. I mean, I can't think of another Hall of Famer we've had.
I mean, yeah, no offense to any of our guests who are all awesome. They're all Hall of Famers in our book, but a literal Hall of Famer is something completely different. Speaking of Hall of Fame, Dr. Rouge, How are you going to be?
Whoa, wait, I'm in a Hall of Fame? Which one?
You are, man. You're in the American CFL Fans Hall of Fame just by dint of being on the show.
I'll take it.
Every week. Dr. Rouge, how are you going to occupy your week this week? Don't tell me you're just going to watch the CFL free agent tracker.
No,
I don't buy it.
Let me see here. We are trying to get our younger one over his second bout of the flu, which, of course, as a parent is just mind-numbingly frustrating.
Oh, yes.
But it is the sixth week of the semester already, and I already see some of my seniors looking at the clock, not literally, but figuratively counting down the days to graduation. And as one of my colleagues is often fond of saying, and we think the students are the only ones counting down until they go to get to graduation. Right. All kidding aside, I mean, for me, the start of the baseball season, and I know it's only spring training, but the pitchers and catchers reporting, there always is that I know warmer sunny days are coming and all those sorts of things. So that is something I'll look forward to. I will certainly be paying attention to what's going on with the Olympics. And, you know, as I hinted earlier, as I'm watching the U.S. Curling team just lose those hats. Oof. Those hats are bad. Bad.
Yeah. And take those Calgary black uniforms with you. Right. Joe, how about yourself? I assume fatherhood is going well for you.
3 months as of today being 2/14. So, by the time this is out, 3 months and 1 day, and I'm still here. So that's good news. I will be.
And you sound like you're getting enough sleep too, which is fantastic.
Somehow. I don't know how, but yes.
Did you notice he didn't mention his wife at all? She probably has one eye, you know, this direction. The other eye is probably a little bit like, hey, Joe, how are you? You know. Yeah, you helping out with this there, Joe?
I'm going to officially no comment that. I am.
Last Valentine's for you, wise guy.
No, things are going pretty decently, actually. So at least I'm being told they're going decently, so I'm going to trust that. I'm with Dr. Rouge on the baseball fever. I reinstated my long dormant Saber membership actually over the last couple weeks here, and I've been pouring into the baseball books when I've had a moment, listening to baseball podcasts left and right when there's no Canadian Football Podcast Network show on my iTunes, and just generally wondering how I'm actually going to handle dealing with a Brewers team that's in contention when the CFL season shows up.
You'll see. See, that's the thing.
Transfer some of those Brewers to Pittsburgh, okay? We could, like, you know, we'd like to have a baseball team here. Oh, wait, I forgot the owner would trade him for some minor leaguers. Never mind.
You had your turn with that a couple of years ago, plus
yes,
the whole World Series thing has happened for your team. So yeah. Let me have my fun.
Yes, absolutely.
See, this is the thing. I'm not so much into the baseball as you all, but rather this is the time of year when NBA basketball gets, you know, really going. And here I am. I'm looking for the Toronto two-peat here. I'm looking for the Raptors Argos two-peat in 2018 to happen. But, you know, when all this talk about moving up the CFL schedule sounds great. But right now, the timing is perfect. CFL season basically starts the minute the NBA playoffs are over. You know, it's perfect for me. I don't want them to change it at all. I keep telling people this. But.
You know, you also forgot that Toronto FC championship.
Yeah, I did. I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Clearly, the Argos messed the turf up.
I could just see it now, the great CFL MLS controversy that rocks North American sports. Yeah. Somehow I don't think that's in the cards for 2018. In any case, let's sign it off, the Rouge, White, and Blue podcast for this week, and we're coming back in 2 weeks, guys. Is that the plan?
Indeed. And when we do, spring training baseball games will be right around the corner. For those right. who care about baseball, Oz.
Right. Well, by then I probably will care because my Lakers will be eliminated mathematically. So in any case, let's sign it off for this episode before we degenerate into talking about modern pentathlon. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with, honest to God, more football talk, CFL football talk, right here on the Rouge, White, and Blue. Until then, have a great fortnight.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.
That's an awesome segue. How about that, huh?
That works.
quick, cover your ass. Quick, cover it again. Okay. Right.
Well, I mean, you're, at least you're covering something.
Let's go out of
here. Montreal's defense certainly. No.
I think we should just leave this whole piece in there. And now I just add the interview.
Yeah. Okay. Montreal defense. Yeah, it'll be awesome. We're going to put out 12 cornerbacks out there on every play. We're going to invent the half dollar defense. The half dollar. The half dollar. The half dollar. The half dollar. The half dollar.